This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome in to this Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's Jonathan Von Tobel, still here at the desk, and we do have to get an update here because, as everybody knows, Stormy Bonatoni was on vacation for a while, and we do have one final check-in on where in the world is Stormy Bonatoni, because as you can tell right now, she is not here. So if we could check in one more time to find out where in the world Stormy Bonatoni is at this point. She's back. She's right here at the desk. She is a little jet lagged, but she has returned. And finally, the chaos can end and you can take control of the ship, which has gone off course.
I like that you guys had that little.
Oh, we had a whole thing. We had a whole thing while you were gone.
That is so fancy.
I'm sure you listened the whole time you were out there.
Every single morning. That's right. I appreciate you guys letting me kind of embrace the time away and disconnecting, which is something I don't do often. So it was really nice to do. It was
fun. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Gladiator style, thumbs up.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. It was by far the best trip that I've ever been on.
We don't have to recap the whole thing, but what was the best part? What was the highlight that you keep? If I say, what's the best thing? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
I think best like thing monument wise that I did was the Colosseum. It was everything that you would think it would be. I mean, just the scope of everything out there, the size and the history was very, very fun. But visually, my favorite place to go is probably Switzerland. I know that sounds crazy after I spent the majority of my trip in Italy, and I do think I want to retire in Lake Como. So if we could, you know, raise the
where George Clooney
cash
lives
here at some point.
Yeah, where George Clooney lives. I will say,
I passed his house.
Thanks to you, I do have, as the kids say, the new squiggle in the brain. I have learned something new. I had no idea that Italy and Switzerland shared a border.
Yeah.
Until you sent that picture, and then I learned.
It was amazing.
I also learned that, obviously, George Clooney lives there. That was like the first, every time that got brought up, I think we had three people. It was Ortega, was it Irizarry, and somebody else, like, George Clooney lives there.
It was really funny because Brian texted me, and he was like, yeah, George Clooney, he said the same thing. And I said, I actually passed his house yesterday, and I took a picture of it. He has this cool little area where it's got the two-way glass on it, where he has this shed thing that he can sit in and eat breakfast and look out onto the lake and look at other people, but nobody can see it for him.
Had to be rich.
So, bougie people. Yep. No paparazzi problems for him in Lake Como, but it was freaking beautiful there. And so now I need to figure out how to save enough money in my future that I can live there 4 or 5 months out of the year, really fine-tune my Italian. It did get better. Everybody speaks English. Though.
I was going to say, generally,
I overthought it.
Yeah, English is a very popular language. So generally, you're probably going to be fine. Did you try at least?
Did I try? Oh, yeah. I made the effort consistently. I think I improved. I would like to go back in a few years at some point, I think. I want to go to Sicily. A lot of the people were telling me that that's a place I should go, and that's where my like family's roots are originally. Yeah. So we will do that.
Did they build anything Chicago-related in the Vatican? Is there anything up? Is there a Cubs W flag or anything like that?
Sadly, not that
I saw. No, nothing. Okay. What's
heartbreaking. When we went to St. Peter's Basilica, Vatican, everything, I was looking for sports-related things for you guys.
What's the fast food thing? What's the famous fast? Portillo's? Is that what it is? No Portillo's popped up in the Vatican, huh?
Can't say that it did, but good note there. I'm sure we'll get an updated fast food rankings this summer.
Well, it's good to have you back.
Portillo's has been. Thank you. Yes, I'm happy to be back. I appreciate you holding down the fort, all the guest hosts that we had as well, the numerous days that you did it on your own. You're a baller. I appreciate it. And we do have so much to get to because I missed a lot. I was keeping tabs on things. I've got bets that are made. So let's get into it. Set the table for everything else that we have here to come on the show today. Time for the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
It's Monday, JBT, which means number one on our list. Call me crazy, but some numbers that we were questioning potentially. I know there's one unexpected bet you think could be live today. And then plus, of course, coming off of this trip, I do have a couple grievances that need to be aired after my travels, which I think is natural.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of cool topics that we have today. I've obviously continued to sprinkle in the NFL, so we'll hit on that. An award bet there, too. But looking forward to some of your takes from your trip abroad.
Number two in our top three items, to no surprise of anyone, the NBA. And Stanley Cup Finals are set. I know you guys talked about Oilers-Panthers on Friday, but I'll give my first thoughts on that series, which is set to begin on Wednesday. And then Pacers-Thunder, game one Thursday. The Thunder, the second largest finals favorite we've seen in the last 20 years. And we'll get into that, of course, with your NBA betting expert. We'll have Zach Cohen on the program as well a little bit later on in an hour or two, Josh Applebaum.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that these finals are more entertaining than the conference finals in both sports. Like, both of them relatively stunk. When you talk about at least length and some of the competitive nature, it does not seem like that's going to be the case in the NBA finals. So we'll see if that happens in the Stanley Cup final, which I think will, but I might have a hot take that I'm going to add late minute to to call me crazy button.
Okay, yeah. I'm excited to hear what that might be. And just in general, want to get into kind of the weekend and how it played out in all major sports. Yes, the NBA, of course, but Major League Baseball, college baseball, Vandy, the top overall seed in the men's tournament, out. Texas also out. We'll get into that in a bit. But let's start with the PGA, because remember early on in this PGA Tour season, JVT, Scottie Scheffler had the hand injury. He started the season a little bit slow. Well, Scottie doesn't know how to lose tournaments for long. He repeats at the Memorial this weekend. He's now won three in his last four PGA Tour events. It's his world, and we're just living in it.
It is, and you talk about it from a betting perspective. It is interesting. So the previous tournament, right, he is a very short favorite. Ends up not winning it, but it finishes tied for fourth. And so you talk about, like, okay, you know, these prices, it's a little crazy, but is it worth it? Well, then he meets expectations here. The thing that I take away is, man, like, we had this, like, a couple of years back, and it continues to be a thing. Even if you're laying these prices, the top tens, top fives of this guy, it seems he might not win the whole thing, but he seems to be a near certainty to add him when you're talking about finishing inside of the top five and inside of the top 10, and why I don't do it every single time. Saw a tweet over the weekend. It was something along the lines of, and I apologize, whoever's original tweet this was, I cannot remember, but it was like, some people have a 401k. I just bet on Scottie Scheffler every weekend. And like, that's why are we not doing it every single weekend, at least in terms of those top finishes? It's insane.
No question about it. And it was funny, like, watching the way things closed out, you want to say Ben Griffin made a push, but it never really felt in doubt ever with Scottie Scheffler. And I think somebody who actually put it really well was Jack Nicklaus on the podium afterwards, talking about Scottie's performance and the different level that he is playing at right now. Take a listen.
Looking at the leaderboard today, he didn't have, I mean, Ben Griffin's a nice player. Sepp Straka is a nice player. Nick Taylor's a nice player. Those are all the guys that were there basically coming down the stretch. But he knows that those guys, you know, are not in his league. Now, if he'd have had, I don't know who else it might have been, but if somebody else at the top, or Xander or somebody like that would have been there, he might have said, well, that might be a little tougher. I might have to do something. He didn't have to.
I mean, that's just it, right? Mm-hmm. He even said in class of his own, he's in a different league right now.
Yep. And we're going to start to see this. I mean, it is incredible. I know we're, what, 2 weeks away from the U.S. Open. Right now, DraftKings has him as plus 280 to win the U.S. Open. Ahead of Rory McIlroy, he was a plus 650. The respect that he's getting is so well deserved. I am going to find it hard to not, like, I am one of those that's like, all right, hey, you know, you're never as good, team, person, whatever, as like the market indicates, especially the market gets a little hot and heavy. But Scottie Scheffler might just be that guy, man. Like, we're talking about these short prices for him to win a major. That's absolutely insane, but he deserves it.
Plus 280 in the outright market. It's just ridiculous. Then you mentioned Rory's price, Bryson DeChambeau at 9-1, the only players on the board with single digit odds out there at Oakmont Country Club. Again, that set to begin next weekend. Three wins his last four times teeing it up. Seven straight top tens. The dude's just different. Let's get into the NBA a little bit here, because I know next segment we're going to fully break down what this NBA Finals matchup looks like. But in terms of how the Pacers got here in the Eastern Conference Final, I know we previewed the Eastern Conference Final talking about we thought this was going to be a long series. You and I know a lot of people liked the Knicks initially to be the ones that were on top closing this thing out. The Pacers continue to exceed expectations, though. What was your biggest takeaway from the series?
I mean, it's just that. Like, there's something to be said if I go back to when I wrote the Eastern Conference Finals preview, which was the word sustainability. Like, can you keep doing this if you're Indiana, right? The record-setting effective field goal percentage through the first two rounds, the three-point shooting from guys like Aaron Nesmith, Pascal Siakam, Andrew Nembhard, that were shooting well above what you normally expect from them. And they just continue to do it. And look, inherently, as I keep saying when we talk about this, the postseason is a small sample size. 16 victories gets you an NBA Finals title. So, in theory, you could just do this for 16 games, right? Like, that's all you need to do is continue to do it. You look at the closeout game against the New York Knicks, 17 of 33 from beyond the arc in that game against New York. That's an incredible mark. They were absolutely brilliant in that regard. And they continue to do it every step of the way. Transition, how effective they can be off of live rebounds, an offensive rating in that final closeout game of 188.9. Absolutely, over the course of the series, ran New York out of the building in terms of how good they were in transition. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can keep doing it, because this is now, as you move forward, the best defensive team we've seen in a while in the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are going to have the physical matches with you, right? You're not an overwhelmingly big team. They're a somewhat wing guard-oriented team just like you. They're very good defensively. They're very physical. I cannot wait to see if they continue to just run this hot even through the NBA Finals.
I'm very curious what the pace of play is going to be like, too, because they are both teams that can force turnovers, capitalize on them. You mentioned getting out in transition, so we'll see what that ultimately looks like. Last thing on the Finals, though, Pascal Siakam cashes around 30-1 pre-flop for the Eastern Conference Final MVP. Tyrese Halliburton thought he had it, didn't he? He played it off well, though. He did it's like when you do the high five and then nobody high fives you back, so you just kind of... Yeah. It behind your hair or something. He did it good.
He did. I'll be saying I'm surprised, and I'm not surprised because I don't think Pascal Siakam deserved it. He totally had a great case for that. He deserved it. I'm more surprised that the voters actually looked past Halliburton's one big game and gave somebody else the award. Like, as I always say, it sounds somewhat insulting, but like the voters for these awards are simpletons. Like they just look at the big name, and especially if he's had a big performance, then that's really going to help him. But statistically, if you look at it, the more consistent player throughout this Eastern Conference Finals was Pascal Siakam, totally deserved it. And it does, again, it is a long shot that they even win this series, but it does open the door for you if you're betting into this market, if you think Indiana's going to win, that you would be willing to take a flyer again on a Pascal Siakam type.
Three games with at least 30, did outscore Halliburton in the series. But I think MVP in general for the finals is a really interesting discussion as well, because what the number is for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, where might you be able to look elsewhere, if at all? So we'll get into that in a minute. When we come back, we're just getting started here on Money Moves, but we'll do that full breakdown of the NBA Finals, given the series price for the Thunder against the Pacers. I think a lot of people would argue that it's just about how many games will OKC get it done rather than will they? So we will discuss it all and all the different betting opportunities possible there. Stay with us. More Money Moves coming up after this.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We got some breaking news here in the NFL as we welcome you back to Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158. The Detroit Lions are reportedly set to lose a key member of their offensive line going into this year. Starting center, Frank Ragnow, expected to retire. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network first reporting the news, and we have since in the last few minutes seen a statement come out from Frank as well on X saying, in addition to, a lot of thank yous and other things, quote, I've tried to convince myself that I'm feeling good, but I'm not. And it's time to prioritize my health and my family's future as part of that statement.
Yeah, I mean, look, so this is obviously a big deal for multiple reasons. I mean, this is by some standards, PFF, for example, had him as the second best center in the National Football League. This is also a offensive line that did undergo some changes. Kevin Zeitler's not there anymore. He's now in Tennessee. We know that your coordinators are gone
as
well.
Ben Johnson's not walking through the door. Yeah. Aaron Glenn's not walking through the door.
So, like, this is the timing of this. It obviously sucks for Detroit, but this is a pretty big deal, I think, when you're talking about the interior of this line, what this now looks like for a team that loves to command, is very physical. I mean, look, Ben Johnson and what he's doing in Chicago, if you look at the offseason moves they've made, it mirrors what Detroit did. A lot of what they had to do and a lot of what they were doing that led to success was building a really strong and deep offensive line. It's not like this thing's trash now. Mm-hmm. There are pieces there that are going to be pretty good, but those are some pretty big changes, especially with Ragnow at the front of the line. So it's going to be interesting to see what the ramifications are. Ragnow retiring is not going to affect the futures market, I would think. So everything's still going to be out there. But how you're power rating this team, and if you're tweaking something, it's going to be pretty interesting to see what this domino effect is along the inside of the offensive line here with Ragnow being gone.
And I know we were kind of discussing in the commercial break briefly when we saw this come through, like, hey, this is something that you wish you would have been able to let the team know about a while ago. But it really sounds like this is something that he's been wrestling with and trying to figure out. He said, I have given this team everything I have and thought I had more to give. But the reality is I simply don't. I have to listen to my body. And this has been one of the hardest decisions of my life. So you can tell this is something that he's really battled with. And I don't know necessarily what it is that's going on with his body or if it's just a career's worth of car crashes, essentially, right, that comes up and builds up. And now you've really got to prioritize your personal health. And this is a big thing that's come up in the NFL for years, right? Mm-hmm. And what those ramifications are down the line for people's careers.
Yeah, I'm always going to be pro. Look, I'm a fan of the Colts, right? I sat there, was watching a Hawaii football game during the NFL preseason and saw on the bottom line Andrew Luck retiring, and I didn't believe it, right? And a lot of that had to do with health. These guys want to take care of themselves. I think that's always very important, so we should really not give him any crap about it, especially with it sounds like it was something he was wrestling with. So the only thing we can do is hope that he does well with whatever he's going to do now moving forward and look at this from the perspective of what the Lions are going to have to deal with. So one would think they didn't find out today. So you're assuming that they're got some plans in place, but a very big blow considering all of the changes now for the Lions after a very, very big offseason across the board, not even just the offense, but the defense at some spots too. So very interested to see what this means for them.
Yeah. And obviously as the summer goes on and all these different OTAs, mini camps, training camp, as things progress, we'll get deeper and deeper into the NFL. But as of right now, season win total for the Lions at 10.5, and they are the favorite to win the NFC North +140, that price for them in the division.
And we should keep in mind too, the third hardest schedule in the NFL by opponent win total coming into the year. So that's a really big deal too. So I'm not going to say that they are going to fall, but I've made the comp, and I'm very open being wrong about this and this being somewhat unfair, but I've made the Ed Orgeron comp, right? Where remember Eddie O wins the title with LSU, loses both of his coordinators, Aranda and Brady, and then everything kind of falls apart when the support system falls out from underneath him. I don't think it'll be that dramatic. I think Campbell's a little bit of a better coach, but would it be surprising to see this team take a step back in a division where Chicago has that offense coordinator on Johnson and looks a lot better, at least on paper? Green Bay is still going to be formidable. Some would say the Vikings have one of the better rosters in the NFL, and if JJ McCarthy hits, look out, this could be another team that is going to be very competitive. So I don't think it would be surprising if you're betting over 10.5 to see this be a sweat for you, or all of a sudden -230 to make the playoffs become something where you can get a better price as the season goes along, given everything we know about this team.
I think your Orgeron comp though is warranted, especially when you think about from an NFL standpoint, just 2 years ago with the Philadelphia Eagles, and they lose their coordinators and have to go through that process, and it doesn't work out for them right away. Of course, they win a Super Bowl the following year, but losing those coordinators was impactful, and now obviously another key piece to the puzzle for the Detroit Lions. Again, for anybody just joining us, their starting center, Frank Ragnow, announcing his retirement this morning. That said, we do have a lot of games to preview in the NBA and the Stanley Cup Finals as they are coming up, getting underway this week, and ProfitX is offering the best odds all playoffs long. ProfitX peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40 plus states right now. The first of its kind in the U.S. You're able to make sports picks against other groups of fans instead of against the sports book. Exchanges also guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. You can even request your own odds in some situations. Download ProfitX today. Use our code VSIN, V-S-I-N. That'll earn you up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. And I'm going to need some of that cash considering the Thunder are -700 favorites in this series against the Pacers. I mentioned it earlier, the second largest favorite we've seen in the NBA Finals last 20 years. And if the Pacers would win, it would be the largest upset we've seen in the last 50 years. Yeah. And price-wise, JVT, as we go through this thing, you're like, okay, what are different ways that if I do believe in OKC, I can buy in? Is it the number of games? Is it the series spread? Even laying 2.5 games in this series is -140 with OKC.
So I said this to Matt Brown and Mike Somich over the weekend. I already said bet. This price, I think, is somewhat accurate. I also think it's a little high on OKC. I see this price, and I see a couple of shops that are, especially if you're 700 or higher, that are no, we're good on OKC money, right? We're okay. You know, we'll take some of the larger bets to win a little, but we don't want the pile on of the public to come in here, given wherever these books are standing with their individual liability. So I think this number's a little bit too high for OKC if you're talking about pure probability of winning the series. And if you look at the board too, you're seeing a couple of other, quite a few shops when you look at the series prices that are actually more $6, -650. I think about -600 is a little bit more of a fair price. So do I think there's value potentially in playing on the Indiana Pacers? Not by probability standards. I just think this thing's just perfectly priced. So where do you want to go with it? In other words, right? I guess if you want to play I just want to have something here, for fun, I put in the gentleman sweep. So I put in, and it's the exact outcome of the series. So it's Thunder go up 3-0, Pacers win game 4 at home, Thunder close it out in game 5. Again, I just want something to sweat out here in this series. I think that it's hard to dive into the exact result and play Thunder in 4, for example, because Stormy, they haven't been good on the road. Their offensive numbers have been awful on the road. They have yet to cover a game on the road in this postseason.
I was literally just about, you took the words out of my mouth. I was about to ask you, have they even covered on the road? No.
They are 0-4 in terms of ATS numbers on the road. So I don't think it would be shocking to see them go out to Indiana, a building in which the Pacers are comfortable, lose that game. But they've been so dominant at home. And they still have road wins, right? They're just not covering and meeting market expectations away from home. So I find it really hard to really dive into the series at all for me, like at least series price, total games, all of that. I think this is relatively priced accurate. And if not, then there's like a slight bit of edge toward the Pacers, but not enough worth playing.
Yeah, I do think that we see Indiana win at least one game at home. So I like that angle. Pacers 2-7-1 in clutch time games this postseason. Best record in the NBA. We know those three wins that they've had, being down seven in the final minute. Again, the way that they've come back has just been remarkable. So even when they're down, it doesn't feel like they're out. So could they make things interesting? We'll see.
That goes back to what we're talking about, though, right? Which is like the sustainability thing that I keep bringing up. It's like, look at the way, like when you look at some of the wins that Indiana has had, the comebacks, the, hey, we haven't seen this since 1970. Hey, this team was, or these teams in this situation were 9-91-0 until the Pacers came around. So that speaks to that too. It's not just the incredible shooting numbers. It's just the fact that this team continues in certain spots to pull the rabbit out of the hat. And you do wonder if that magic evaporates. Yeah. And I would think it is very likely against a team that is as good defensively as Oklahoma City is.
From an MVP standpoint, and I'm going to go off the DraftKings number here because it's kind of what's most widely available. We mentioned the series price sitting at minus 700 for OKC. SGA is minus 600, so it's not like you're getting much of a discount in that perspective either. But is there a world where OKC's second best player, Jalen Williams, could potentially warrant a bet? And I only ask this question because of what we're just coming off of with the Eastern Conference Final.
Sure.
Very similar price. Williams sitting at 35-1. Pascal Siakam was 30-1. He's the second best player. Is there a world where you don't need or you don't see SGA be the best player on the court for this series and somebody else steps up? Is that possible?
I don't think it's. No. Nothing's impossible.
Listen, I'm just trying to throw things out.
Yeah, nothing's impossible. But, I mean, I guess save it for Why Not Wednesday, and I'll tell you no. But I'm just like, from the Thunder standpoint, I would just say flat out no, right? I think that the gravitational pull, as I like to say, for these guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, it is much stronger than that of like a Tyrese Haliburton. Tyrese Haliburton's a very good player. You could argue he is their best player, but he has a running mate in terms of like usage, scoring, that is at least on even keel with him.
Okay.
There is nobody like that for OKC. And I just don't think there is a world in which they win the series and Shai is not playing at the level that gets him that award as well.
I think that's fair. I was just thinking about the way that Williams' shooting numbers ticked up in the conference finals, and like maybe the just thinking out loud, trying to give some other options out there, because minus 600 isn't something that is bettable. I mean, maybe if you have the bankroll for it, those of you at home, I know I personally don't. So I'm trying to find other creative ways to get involved. And we'll get into it a little bit later, because I know one of your bets that you're going to be giving out today is a series prop as well. So we will do that. If for anyone wondering what the game one numbers are, the Thunder currently, I mean, opened 8.5, got up to 9.5. We're seeing a lot of nines, though, pop in now, and a little bit of movement on that total to the over from 229 to 230.5. But we will have all week to get there. Game one coming up on Thursday. We'll be right back. Zach Cohen joins us next.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And if you are looking to find out where the money is really going, unlike other sources, our betting splits here at VSiN come straight from Circa and DraftKings Sportsbooks, giving you the insight to where the sharp action is landing. Circa is known for taking big bets from professional bettors. DraftKings gives you that broader market perspective. That means you're getting the real action, not just public money, but the kinds of wagers that move lines. Check out the percentages of bets versus the percentage of handle on each and every game across every major sport, helping you make more informed decisions. Get VSiN's exclusive betting splits for as little as $9.99 for your first month over at vsin.com/subscribe right now. And when you are a subscriber, you don't reach the article limits, which means you can get all of the great work from Zach Cohen, who joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Senior editor here at VSiN, you can follow him on X at Betting on X, has breakdowns right now, both the NBA Finals and the French Open. So yeah, we're going to sneak a little bit of tennis in here as well, Zach, but we're going to start with the NBA. How are you today, and how are you feeling about this finals matchup? The Thunder are massive favorite in this one against the Pacers.
I'm excited for the matchup. I know that people want to hate on the ratings or whatever. I don't care whatsoever. I'm excited to see the Pacers, one of the most exciting teams in the league, go against one of the best defenses in the league. So I think it's going to be really fun for NBA fans.
All right. So I'll ask this general question then. The most important on-court matchup, what do you think it comes down to? Indiana, Oklahoma City, you can take it wherever you want, but on the court, what sticks out the most?
I think it's going to be whether or not Siakam can score against those big, you know, tough physical perimeter defenders that the Thunder have. We just saw Siakam win Eastern Conference Finals MVP. Whether or not you thought he deserved it, he had a great series against the Knicks. Now we're going to see him go against kind of the Lou Dort, Alex Caruso, you know, shoving you out of the paint, which has worked so well in the last two rounds. We saw them do it against Nikola Jokic, against the Nuggets. They just played him so far away from the basket with their physicality. They are not called for fouls when they do it. It was hard for, you know, the Nuggets to get Jokic the ball. Then in the second round, you know, the next round, it was the same thing with Randle. They really took Randle completely out of that series against Minnesota. Can they do the same thing to Siakam? I think they're going to be able to do it.
Yeah, this OKC defense has been the real deal. And we were talking last segment about kind of how many games we could see this thing going. I know JVT said a bet numbers wise you liked was a gentleman's sweep, but looking at your article today, Zach, you think this series could go a little bit longer. Why?
I took over 5.5. I just don't really see any value in taking it to go any less. I think that for as good as Oklahoma City has been throughout this postseason, you know, for all the questions that kind of Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams have answered, I still see them having a really bad game in Indiana at some point. And I think that one of these first two games, we're going to see the Thunder kind of put in a lackluster performance. Maybe they win both of them. I just do think there's going to be close games early in the series. That's when Rick Carlisle's, you know, coaching acumen should help them a little bit against Mark Daigneault, who is a great, great head coach, but has had some bad moments throughout these this postseason. I think Carlisle's going to have his guys ready to go early in this series after a week off.
So to that point, these road issues that Oklahoma City has had, can you explain them? Do you think they persist here? What do you think the deal is? Because that's why I think it's kind of – I wouldn't play them to sweep or anything because, Zach, they've laid eggs in all of these road games essentially. Haven't covered a road game yet.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's an inexperienced, you know, supporting cast outside of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. And I know, you know, the cliche is that role players play better at home. It's real, though. Like, those guys, they're just not as comfortable when playing outside of Oklahoma City. So when they go into Indiana, which is already a really difficult road environment, I don't see them having two really strong games. I think at the very least, we see the Pacers win either game three or game four.
Meanwhile, the Thunder at home have the best playoff point per game differential of any team entering the finals in NBA history, the way they've been outscoring teams. What did you make of this game one spread? And we're seeing as high as 9.5 in the market out there. There are some nines showing once again, though. Do you think, as far as game one goes, how that might play out?
I think Indiana's going to keep game one close, so I'll probably be on the Pacers in game one. This is where I really feel the coaching matchup kind of benefits Indiana. It's just a lot of time off for Carlisle, who has been very good historically against the spread when having, you know, 4 or 5 days of rest. So I think that we're going to see the Pacers come with maybe their best game plan of the entire series in game one. Maybe that's not enough. I mean, the Thunder are so much better than the Pacers. Like, I wrote it in my story. I really don't see any world in which Indiana actually wins this series. But I do think there's going to be some, you know, closer games than people expect. And that's why I ultimately landed on the over 5.5 games. I just think that there's going to be some room for a really hot shooting game from the Pacers at some point, you know, a really bad shooting game from the Pacers at some point. And then maybe early in the series, as I've mentioned, a game where Carlisle just kind of outclasses Daigneault.
All right, we've seen the total for game one go from 229.5 up to 230.5. How do you think these games are going to get played pace-wise? Because I think OKC is going to be more than willing to match tempo with Indiana, right?
Yeah, I think overs are going to be the way to go. I agree with you. Like, I don't really think Oklahoma City is going to have any problem playing fast. Like, they're going to have no problem scoring on this Pacers defense. I know that Indiana has been much better defensively since December. That was one of the reasons I took them to win the Eastern Conference. I just think that this team was, you know, was top seven, top eight in the league in adjusted defensive rating from December 8th on. But I do think that this team presents so many more problems than, you know, the Knicks did. I know that they were able to slow down Jalen Brunson, but that's a smaller guard, you know, going against all the size that Indiana had on the perimeter. You know, guys like Nembhard, Nesmith, like, all of them are bigger than Brunson, but that's not the case with Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He's going to be able to shoot over the top of a lot of those guys. He's going to be able to blow by them, and he's going to be able to draw fouls much in the way that Brunson was. So I don't think that the Pacers are going to have any, you know, success kind of slowing SGA down in the series.
VSiN senior editor Zach Cohen joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. As far as some of these series long props goes, have you gotten into any of those markets? Were there any names that really stood out to you from that standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say that I felt good about someone else winning MVP. Like, SGA is just going to do it. I mean, that's why he's minus 600. But I do really like Chet Holmgren to average 20-plus points in this series. He had 3 20-point games against the Timberwolves last series, and I kind of see him playing the role that Karl-Anthony Towns just did in the last series, where, you know, he's a floor-spacing center against this team, this Pacers team, where Miles Turner is very good at protecting the rim, but a little bit slower on the perimeter. So if Holmgren is knocking down threes, forcing Turner to come out, I think he's going to just be able to drive to the rim at will. He is really good at putting the ball on the floor and finishing at the basket. So I think there's going to be multiple 20-point games for him in this series. I think the question is, will there be like a 28 or 30? Because he'll probably need that to account for like a 14-point game at some point. But I do think 20-plus at plus 500 is a really good number.
All right, so to that point, one of the angles that I was really looking forward to here, last three games of this series for Isaiah Hartenstein, been playing his points and rebounds under. Does he have a place in this series? Because I feel like Dagnall's kind of moved away from him. He's going to come off the bench. He's not going to completely disappear. But you don't have to go super big against Indiana, and I feel like a guy like Hartenstein's going to suffer. Playing his unders early in the series was an angle I wanted to. I wanted to find some, like, over-under points per game for the series because I think you can go under on Hartenstein. What do you think his role is going to be?
I completely agree with you. That kind of goes hand in hand with the Chet play too, is that I just don't think they're going to go double big as often as they did during the regular season. They just can't really do it against this Pacers team. I wrote it at VSiN.com. One of the only ways you could really let Indiana in this series is by playing two slower bigs, allowing them to kind of run and run you off the floor, which is what we saw them do against the Knicks last series. Like that Mitchell Robinson, Karl-Anthony Towns thing, it was kind of a failed experiment. For as well as Mitchell Robinson played, it just allowed the Pacers to get up the floor quickly, score easy baskets, and you don't want to do that if you're OKC. And that's kind of the reason you've built the team the way that you did, is you have just all sorts of lineup versatility to play the way you want. And I just think that Dagnall is going to end up having to play Hartenstein 20 or fewer minutes a game in this series, if it even is that much. So I think we're going to see Holmgren play 35 plus minutes, a lot of minutes at center with maybe Jalen Williams as a small ball four, or Lou Dort as a small ball four. So I agree with you. I think Hartenstein unders, and I'll reiterate Holmgren overs, because I do think he's going to play a lot of center minutes.
Okay, last couple minutes here, Zach. Let's shift to the second major of this 2025 tennis season, action underway in Paris for the French Open. That's another article you have up right now at VSiN.com, and I know there will be many more previewing different matches and daily best bets throughout. For people not particularly familiar with tennis, what are some things they should be looking out on, and are there any bets to be made today?
Yeah, I still have one left that I posted to the picks page. It was not in the article. It's Andre Rublev to win over 10.5 games against Jannik Sinner. So that is a player prop that you could find in several different shops. Rublev is a top 10 player in the world. Sinner is probably the number one player in the world. He is ranked number one in the world. I just think it's a little bit disrespectful to Rublev to be sitting there at 10.5 games. He could lose this match pretty convincingly. It could be 7-5, 6-3, 6-3. You will still win in over 10.5 games. That's still a dominant win for Jannik Sinner. I really like that play, and I also think there's a chance that Rublev wins a set. So it's definitely one that I think is interesting, because there's definitely a chance that, you know, Sinner plays lights-out tennis and does blow him off the court. But Rublev is really, really good. He should be able to cover that. And I will say, just to add on top of that, Sinner's still out there at plus 200 to win the tournament, which is about where he was to start the tournament. That's a little bit confusing to me, considering we've now seen him play lights out through four rounds now. He beat Yuri Laheshka, a really good player, you know, barely even lost games in that match. I just think that Sinner is pretty clearly the number two player in the world on clay, and I don't think the gap between him and Carlos Alcaraz, who's the favorite to win this tournament, is all that big.
Really awesome stuff, Zach. Appreciate your time, buddy. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, guys.
Zach Cohen. Again, find the articles up right now at VSiN.com, as well as the picks on the VSiN Daily Picks page. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can get access to all of it unlimited. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, get ready. Time for Call Me Crazy Butt on this Overreaction Monday.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Put on your tinfoil hats.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole world gone crazy. For Call Me Crazy, But.
All right, welcome back to Money Moves. Time for Call Me Crazy, But. A handful of different bets or numbers that call me crazy based on the opinions we think about them. And quite frankly, I know sometimes I throw in some situations. Coming off of my trip to Italy, I've got to be honest, I have a few grievances I need to air. So let me know if you want me to get those call me crazies out off the top or at the end. What would you prefer?
Go ahead, fire. Let's go.
All right, I'm going to start with this one because I was told by everyone going on my trip that you're not actually going to gain weight when you're in Italy because the ingredients are so good. You're walking around so much. Call me crazy, but people who say you're not going to gain weight when you go to Europe and when you go to Italy are sick liars who lie. Absolutely not. You can walk as much as you want. No matter, like, you're eating a ridiculous amount of pasta and food every single day, you're going to gain weight. And I gained a lot of
weight. Body feeds off carbs. It's good energy.
It was... Pasta are not the good carbs.
So was it just a lot of pasta? Are you a sweets person? I don't really.
Yes.
Yeah.
I went to the chocolate capital of the world.
Is that Italy?
Switzerland.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, wait, what? I didn't know that.
Swiss chocolat.
Oh, I thought you just like ventured over the border and just went to that lake and then went back in. So you actually like went to like a town in Switzerland? Did you go get chocolate?
I went to Zurich and Interlaken. Yeah. And like, yes, okay. I got chocolate. I actually brought you something.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
All right, dude. This is the greatest part about being on the show. Like the first week I was here, Ortega brought me stuff from Louisville, and now I get this?
So this is a Swiss Army knife, but it's actually made out of Swiss chocolate.
Yo, that's dope.
And I went to the oldest chocolate something or other.
Chocolatier? Chocolatier?
Yes, in the world, okay. In Italy. And so I got you some chocolate from there as well. Sure. So you're getting lots of chocolate
from
this trip.
All right.
But
ice
you're going to get
me
that.
Ice cream on me in Omaha. How about that?
Okay. Zesto's on you.
There we go. Yeah,
perfect.
Zesto's.
And then one more real quickly. Call me crazy, but it's not hard to be aware of your surroundings.
Okay.
The number of people that I wanted to hurt.
Okay.
For the actions that they were doing on this trip were ridiculous. Just like, just not being aware of anybody around you. Taking pictures in a spot for 20 minutes when there's a queue and a line for people that are trying to do stuff because you want to look like you're alone and you're artistic and you think you're an influencer that's doing all of these things and everybody really cares about the way you look in front of a thing. Like, take your picture and be gone. And like, I was on an escalator and there's so many people that are trying to get up to their planes and do all these different things. And they just decide they want to stand right on top of the escalator when they get up there and don't make way for anybody else. They just stand right in the middle. Everywhere I went, people were just slowing down and standing right in the middle of everything. And it was just brutal. I don't understand. Just have common courtesy and be aware of other people.
Maybe it's European culture.
I don't think so. I think it's just people that, I mean, it's like Disneyland, basically. If anyone's ever been to Disneyland and you see people that are walking around and just for no reason, they stop in an open walking path because it's just what they do. But it was everywhere I went, and especially in Italy because of the Jubilee, it was so busy.
It does bring me my hottest take, which is Disney adults are pox upon society, but I will not discuss that.
I kind of agree with that. Okay, let's get to the betting stuff.
Did I get that right, though? I think, did I use that word
but
properly?
But I'm not crazy, right? I'm not crazy?
No, not at all. All right. So let's get to the betting stuff. Call me crazy, but we're going to do baseball a little bit later. I felt even crazy writing this down. Rockies might be live tonight against the Marlins, right? Like, are we doing a little too much here? This is wild. So the Rockies and the Marlins are opposing one another. Herman Marquez is going to get the start. Max Meyer's going to get the start here, too. Look, this is choices between bad and worse, right? Like, these guys aren't pitching very well. Having said that, there's like some things you could point to for Marquez. You're like, dude, my guy deserves a little bit better when you're talking about it. And by the way, he comes in pretty good form. His last two starts, Philadelphia and the Chicago Cubs, 13 innings pitched, 2.08 ERA. His walks are down, strikeouts are up. Okay. If you look at the underlying number, 7.13 ERA, but a 4.16 fielding independent. Look at this. The Marlins are up to $2 favorites in some spots over the Rockies and Herman Marquez. Like, I understand that the Rockies stink. I understand that they have, what's the note? Like, they reached 50 losses faster than we've ever seen or whatever it is. They're awful. But the Marlins, $2 favorites here with Meyer on the hill. He's allowed three runs or more in 7 of his last 11. Look at his last 6 starts.
So, okay. I think in baseball, anyone is always live. Baseball is a fickle, strange, weird sport. But you already mentioned the ERA for Marquez. 7.13 is not good, JVD.
But the underlying metrics are telling you he deserves better. And let me finish this really quickly. If you look at him, too, on the season, .344 batting average on balls in play for Marquez. That's horrendous luck. Left on base percentage, he's 51.5%. That's horrendous luck. My man, if you look at some of the underlying numbers for his road splits or so much, even away from home, a .383 batting average on balls in play against him. That's horrendous luck. My man deserves better.
He's had bad luck, But what I'll say is he's still backed by a lineup that's hitting 2.3 runs per game on the road. Yeah. So even if he has had bad luck and has a better day, who's to say that he's going to have the bats behind him in order to help them and help the cause? The stat I love that it's been making the rounds so far about the Rockies is that Scotty Scheffler, who won the Memorial, has three wins in the last 30 days. That's the same as the Rockies, who have played 28 games in the last 30 days.
Okay.
So,
I think it's a little much.
They're on pace to win 25 for the year. Oh, and I'll also, just to play devil's advocate one last time, Greg Peterson, in his article up on VSiN.com this morning, he has the Marlins on the run line. Only 11 of the Rockies' first 50 losses were by a single run.
I'm gonna be alone here. I will plant my flag. I will be Jon Snow, Battle of the Bastards. Let's do this thing.
Okay, I'm going to go to the NHL for a quick one here and call me crazy. But call me crazy, but Sam Bennett shouldn't be seventh on the board to have the most goals in the Stanley Cup final. 11-1 the price. He currently has the most goals in the playoffs to this point. And maybe if you're looking at his numbers in last year's final against Edmonton, where he only had one goal in that series, and you're thinking, okay, they just played him really well. I would also say he just didn't have the same playoffs last year. He also had 6 goals going into the Stanley Cup final. This year he's got 10. He's also got 51 shots on goal, which I believe is second only to Connor McDavid at this point in the playoffs. 33-1 also for Conn Smythe. I know when you look at the Florida Panthers, it seems like it should be all Sergei Bobrovsky, and I understand that completely. But should Bennett go on some goal-scoring run, which he's had really timely, important goals as well, got Matthew Tkachuk on one wing, Carter Verhaeghe on the other. Great chemistry with that group. I just feel like 11-1 for most goals feels like
in this series
feels a little long for this series. Yes.
Okay. All right. I actually kind of like that. I need something to bet in this series. All right. Can I build on this then really quickly?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm like, you had me questioning myself for a second there, but yes.
No. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. You don't have a lower third for this. This is my last minute intro to this. I apologize, but call me crazy. And I think you are on this one. The Panthers can win this in like 5 or fewer games, right?
I mean, sure they could.
I mean, like, I sure think, okay, let me put it this
will.
Way. They will win this in 5
no,
or fewer games, right?
No.
They're so good, dude. They're so good on defense.
Are the Oilers
balanced
not?
On offense. I think that, again, when you're splitting hairs between two great opponents, I think it comes down to little things. Isn't the Hyman loss like kind of a big one when you're looking at the like,
but they
the
got
grand?
Matthias Ekholm back
okay.
as well.
All right.
I think people are overblowing the Hyman injury a little bit too much.
I don't know, man.
It's significant. I'm not doubting that, but I think it's a little too much.
I think Florida's better than what they were last year, and they were up 3-0 in
but
that series.
So is Edmonton.
At one point.
My concern is more about Connor McDavid right now and him coming off of the ice with the trainer the other day.
Sure. See?
So we shall see.
It's not that crazy. All right. Boy, a better shot Oilers or Peyton. Well, I mean, Oilers by a long shot, considering the odds. We can actually look at that one. All right, let's go one more long shot. Not a long shot, but big picture thing. Joe Burrow is going to win MVP this season. I don't think it's that crazy of a statement. This is based on nothing but I love the messaging coming out of that team. Like Burrow and that team seem like hyper-focused on all they keep talking about is we've stunk at the beginning of the year. Burrow the other day. Yeah, last year, if I were just removed, just put in a vacuum, here's Joe Burrow season, you'd be like, oh, you won MVP, right? The guy was incredible last year. And then he comes out the other day, he's like, yeah, I got to be better. Like, the reason why we didn't make it to the playoffs is because it was me. And I was like, dude, this team seems locked in on what they want to do. Their offense is pretty much all back together again. They seem very focused on not starting this season very slowly. They put more effort, it seems, and again, we're only in June, toward not having that happen. I think this team's going to be really freaking good, and I think Burrow's going to have an even stronger season from last year. And I think it helps that he is now, you know, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. We've gone through the pecking order. Media love to give it to guys who don't have it yet. He seems next in line. If he has even a season close to what he did last year and they win 10 games, I think he's going to win MVP.
I think any given year, he's a name that should be up there and could. So plus 650, sure, the two favorites. As you mentioned, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, both at plus 550. But how about a suggestion that Brian Ortega put in the rundown? Josh Allen, because he and Haley Steinfeld got married over the weekend. Josh Allen, MVP, could have that good marriage luck, plus 550.
Matt Eumanns would argue that is
back.
A severe downgrade to get married.
Does he have any
athlete.
Statistical truth to that?
No.
Anything
I think,
to back that information?
I don't think so. I think there was a couple of years where a guy got married or something and like he just had like a bad year. Although one can make the argument, I think you said that there's like statistical backing that says that it's not the case. One of the big upgrades is having children. If you remember Fred VanVleet, like the day after he had a child went nuts in the NBA finals. So like maybe you just have to have kids as opposed to get married, but severe downgrade.
I think the severe downgrade is like people that are going through a divorce because that's actually like emotionally taxing and you got to figure out other stuff. average change in statistical output for married NFL quarterbacks the year following their marriage. Completion percentage goes up 0.66%. Mm-hmm. Yards per game up 21 yards per game. Touchdowns up 0.63 more touchdowns per game. QBR 0.86. Mm-hmm. All improvement numbers, ladies and gentlemen. Just saying. We're going to take a quick timeout, resetting hour two of the program coming up next. We got some college baseball, MLB, Stanley Cup playoffs, and so much more.